Hello, everyone. Seven Investing CEO Simon Erickson here, and thank you for listening to the Seven Investing Podcast. Our podcast is made possible by our subscribers, who allow us to empower you to invest in your future each and every month. In exchange, we give our subscribers exclusive access to our monthly stock market recommendations from each of our lead advisors. To support this podcast and join other Seven Investing fans in our exclusive subscribers forum, where we discuss the latest market moves in real time, go to 7investing.com/subscribe to subscribe to 7 Investing today. We're here to empower you to invest in your future. We are 7 Investing. Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's edition of the 7 Investing Podcast, where it's our mission to empower you to invest in your future. You can learn more about our long-term investing approach and also see our 7 favorite stock market recommendations each and every month at 7investing.com. My name is Simon Erickson, and we're going to be having a very special guest to our show today. Dave Ahern is the co-host of the Investing for Beginners podcast. Like 7 Investing, he's looking to go out there and empower individual investors to learn more about investing and also find stock market opportunities. He's joining me today from Virginia. Dave, real pleasure to have you on the podcast here today.
Yeah, thank you, Simon. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm truly honored that you wanted to talk to me.
I really do. We have a shared interest in empowering other investors. And perhaps let's chat at the 10,000 foot level about what got you into investing and maybe tell us a little bit about the Investing for Beginners podcast and what you want to accomplish with your show.
Okay. So kind of how I got started in investing, and we can talk a little bit more of this in the future, but I worked in the banking industry for a while. I was in the restaurant business for 25 years, and I got out of that rat race and got into the banking world. And one of the things that they asked me when I first started working at Wells Fargo was, what do you want to be? What do you want to do? And I was lucky that I had a financial advisor that worked on my branch, and we struck up a friendship, and he asked me about it, started talking to me about investing. And it just kind of really I got bitten by the bug very early on. And so I just started investigating and trying to learn, and I'm a very curious person, and I love to dive into things. I view money investing as a language, and whenever I get hooked on something, I always try to really dive into it as deeply as I can to learn as much about it as I possibly can. So I didn't go to school for finance. I'm a self-taught investor. I've read all the biggies, the Warren Buffetts and the Joel Greenblatts, and you name it, I've read it. And that's kind of how I got bitten by the bug. And that's really what spurred me to start working with Andrew Sather, my partner, for the Investing for Beginners podcast. We both felt like for individual investors like us that we're not starting off with like gobs and gobs of money, that there weren't a lot of resources to help people go from zero to, you know, being able to work with a financial advisor, for example, at a bank like Wells Fargo, because as many of your listeners may or may not know, they won't touch you unless you have a certain amount of money. And so there, at the time when we started, there was a big gap. There's been a lot more competition in the podcasting world and finance recently, but when we started, there wasn't much out there. And so Andrew and I felt like this was an opportunity for us to try to help people. And that's one of the things that I saw big time in the bank, is that people need help. There's not a lot of resources. There's a lot of myths and misconceptions about money just in general, and investing even more so. And we wanted to start off and try to help people learn what stocks are, how to pick individual companies, and just get investing for their long-term financial health, because there's a brewing crisis out there with people not having enough money invested for retirement. And it's a big deal, and it's not talked about enough, but there is the stats are out there that, you know, the average person has less than what, $200 saved, kind of thing. So there's a need for this.
There certainly is a need. It's a noble mission. We're glad to tackle this with you out there. And it seems like you've had multiple different evolutions of your career, right? From restaurants to the banking world to the podcast world. And then also, you know, just kind of from being self-taught. Dave, how would you consider yourself as an investor? Have you evolved as an investor over time? And what's kind of influenced your own style for that?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I have definitely evolved. When I started off, I was all about numbers. It was all about numbers. I love numbers. I'm a musician by trade. And so that whole idea of structure, form, theory, numbers, everything making sense, that all really resonated with me. And I was all about that. And then I discovered guys like Charlie Munger, and it just kind of opened my eyes that there's a lot more to just the numbers. One of my favorite books out there is a book called Narrative and Numbers. It's by Professor Oswath de Moteren. And he talks a lot about combining story and numbers. And that is something that, along with Charlie Munger, has really helped me kind of evolve as an investor. I started off as very much a value investor, and I still would consider myself that. But I think before, I was definitely more hardcore. It was all about margin of safety, buying cheap. And that was really the most important thing. And I think over the last 3 or 4 years, I've evolved where I'm more about trying to find a great company that I can find at a deal, depending on what the deal is, and trying to, you know, hold on to that for a long time. I've literally not sold a stock in 3 years. So I try to find things and hold on to them. And so, yeah, I've definitely evolved from more hardcore numbers to there is a story the numbers are telling, and I just got to decipher what it is.
The name of your podcast is the Investing for Beginners podcast. Mm-hmm. Just the name connotates that you might be going for educating people that are earlier in the phase of investing. Like you said, just getting started out. Is there something that common comes up as a question from your listeners right now? Is there something that in the phase of investing that they're in, they keep asking you or they keep wanting to know about?
Yeah, there's
starting you.
Yeah, there's definitely some themes that have kind of come up and have continued even though we have talked about them, just because there's these misconceptions about money. And a lot of people don't really understand what it is when they're buying a company. They don't understand that when they invest in the stock market, that they are buying a piece of a company. So when you invest in Microsoft or Amazon or Nvidia, you're actually buying a piece of that business. You are now a part owner of that particular business. And a lot of people still look at them as tickers. And that was particularly evident during the whole, you know, run up in after the pandemic and the, you know, 2022 crash, if you will. And that was very evident. The other thing that's really seems to be common is people don't really understand the idea of investing consistently and continually trying to put money into the market, and that you can't time the market. And just by trying to find good companies and buying them, you know, when you want to, and trying to do that regularly and putting money into the market, that over a long period of time, that's going to help you grow your wealth. And I think there seems to be two kind of dichotomies. There's a lot of people that get into the market to think that they can make it rich quick. And there's a lot of people that really during the pandemic and afterwards really dived into that. And since then, that has kind of morphed into, okay, I need to really figure out what I'm doing here because I lost a buttload of money on some of these really screaming high valuation companies that have not panned out like I thought they would. And there's a lot of people in the market that didn't realize that the market doesn't go up to the right all the time, and that you are going to see volatility, you are going to see ups and downs. And so those are kind of the two or three things that we get a lot of questions about those kinds of particular ideas of consistently putting money in the market, how to find great businesses, and understanding what it is I'm actually buying.
Those are fantastic rules of thumb. I wanted to follow up on that perhaps and say that, you know, whenever you're trying to get into any new field, investing included, you have to expect there's going to be a learning curve. You're going to make mistakes along the way, right?
Yeah.
You're going to be a musician. You're not going to start on day one playing the solo to Freebird out there.
Not going to be Jimi Hendrix coming out of the gate.
We give it as much as we want to be, right?
Right, is right.
But let's talk about investing too. I'm sure that there's investing mistakes that you make along the way. What would be a couple of perhaps your own mistakes that you've run into that you'd like people to know about that are watching the show?
Well, I think there's two things that you can definitely learn from your mistakes. And I think that's probably one of the best ways to learn is by analyzing the things that we've done and why we did them. So I can give you a couple examples. Number one, I bought PayPal probably during maybe towards the end of the pandemic, and I paid way too high of a price for it. I think it was trading around 320-ish or so when I first bought it. And my idea was that, first of all, that the way we were going to use our wallets, our money, was going to drastically change, and that has not come to pass. And so it does matter what price you pay for a company, and you can pay too high of a price for a business. And PayPal was certainly riding a high of the pandemic and the way that people had to use their money to buy things because we were all stuck at home. And so that drastically changed. And so I pay too high of a price for that. And I learned from that and tried to pay more attention to valuation and understanding what it is I'm buying. The other, I guess the other mistake I made was buying a company, Intel, and the semiconductor company. And really my mistake with that was really not understanding the cyclicality of the business, as well as just not understanding semiconductor, the business, and really where Intel was in the ecosystem and what was really going on with the company. The company is now trying to, I guess, evidence a turnaround. And as Warren Buffett has said many times, turnarounds don't often turn. And so I mistakenly, well, time will tell, I guess, but I believe that they were still such a monster that they could kind of withstand this and go through this turn without it affecting them too much. And one of my ideas at the time, which in hindsight was kind of dumb, was that they were spending so much on, they were spending more on R&D than AMD was generating in revenue. And I just figured that, you know, with that kind of investment, there's just no way they can fail. But I have learned since that it's not about the money you spend, it's how you spend it and how well you spend it and how well you reinvest it. And management matters. And those things really kind of all coalesce to making buying Intel as maybe not a great investment for me. You know, time will tell whether you buy it at a lower price, maybe it'll turn out okay. But, you know, at the $60, $70 price that I was paying for at the time, that was not a good decision.
Yeah. So maybe to recap those, if I could, Dave, and tell me if this is correct, but it sounds like with PayPal, you really, the value investor came back out after you made the purchase. You realized you might've bought it a little bit too spicy and you wanted to be a little bit more conscious about the price you paid.
Yeah.
But then also with Intel, you said that you, hey, this is a really, really high quality company, spending a ton of money, has superior resources, but that didn't necessarily translate into the competitive advantage you were looking for.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's a much more eloquent way to say what I just said.
I got to recap, but I got the benefit of looking back on what you said. Yeah. Well, perfect. Well, we're here with Dave Ahern. In the second part of the program, we're going to go over a couple of stocks that he actually invests in and one that's on his radar, and also some overall takeaways for investors. Come back in just a moment to the 7 Investing Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
And we're back. Welcome back to the 7 Investing Podcast. My guest today is Dave Ahern. He's the co-host of the Investing for Beginners podcast. In the first part of the program, we talked about some common investing mistakes and how to avoid those. In the second part here, let's talk about some actual stocks that investors should be considering. Dave, you and I spoke just before the program today. I said, hey, based on all of the things that have influenced you as an investor and the style of investing that you have, and we came up with one stock that kind of is a good representation of your investing style. That was Visa. Tell us a little bit about why you like Visa as a stock.
Oh boy, how long do you got? I think the biggest, one of the biggest reasons why I like Visa is that they are a company that they're critical to the infrastructure of the United States or the world and how we spend money and how we buy things, how we sell things. And they're the middleman between merchants and people buying what they want to buy, their products and their services. And they have developed these toll roads that are, at this point, seem to be unassailable. And there have been a lot of things in the recent years that have come for them, if you will. Buy now, pay later was supposedly going to revolutionize how we spent money. That has not come to pass. Crypto a few years ago was going to unseat Visa and MasterCard as the next way that we're going to pay. That doesn't seem to be coming to pass. I think one of the biggest regulation problems, government regulation, is something that does concern me. And that's more of a global issue than it is necessarily right here in the United States. And then there's also the other risks of things like FedNow or the UPI in India, as well as the Pix in Brazil. Those are potential upstarts that could upend or, take a dent out of Visa. But just the fact that they have incredibly high margins across the board, and they generate so much free cash flow. And it's one of those businesses that my friend Braden Dennis of the Canadian Investor Podcast, he likes to say that Visa is one of those companies that the 10 people that work there can turn off the lights and the business can still run. And it's really become this moat. Like, when I think of a moat, Visa is one of those companies that just really springs to mind as a company that has a moat. When you think about valuation of the company, it's never cheap and it's never been cheap. And if you look over the last 10 years of the company, I think the lowest PE it's traded at is around 19 or 20, and it's generally in the mid 30s. So it's one of those companies that, for a value investor, I may have skirted the rules a little bit and just buy it when it's, I started buying it during the pandemic when it fell 50, 60% like everything else. And so I got a screaming deal on it. But even now, I still continue to put money into it because I think the value of the company is going to be worth more even in the next 5 or 10 years.
I'm glad you pointed out some of those risks, Dave, because it's things that, we naturally look at them and we think, oh, crypto is going to completely unseat this company like Visa, or like the other one, buy now, pay later, the regulations, there's a litany of things that could potentially be risks. But like you said, I mean, Visa is well aware of these. Mm-hmm. They're on top of these things. It has not taken them from the dominant leadership that they have in the company. It's funny how, as investors, we tend to convince ourselves that something is going to be the death blow. In reality, that's not always the case.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Even Visa, right? For example, they have created this platform called Visa Direct, which allows them to transfer money directly to their Visa cards. So in essence, it's acting exactly like FedNow or Pix would, for example. And so, like you said, they're very aware of the potential threats out there, and they either partner with people or they come up with their own solutions to try to, mediate or alleviate those potential risks.
Dave, how do you think about valuation? I know there's a zillion different ways that people can attack the valuation question, but when you say something like Visa's always expensive, but you said that you were going to invest in it, how do you think about valuation when picking a stock?
Well, as like everything in finance, it depends. So my general rule or philosophy, if you will, is I like to work with DCFs, discounted cash flows. And I know that can be a bit of a triggering comment in the finance world, but I like them. They work for me. And I have studied at the feet of Professor Oswald de Moter and Michael Mobison. And that's really how I learned evaluation. And those two gentlemen are some of the smartest people I've ever read. And I just feel like that the price you pay matters, and I have to work within those confines. Now, having said that, the more experience that I've gotten and understand that the cash flows that a company generates is really where the value is going to come from, and how I discount those and factor all those things in matters. But when you look at a company like Costco or a Visa, these companies that are always perpetually valuable or very expensive, the market is placing a bit of a more of a premium on them than they would be on, let's say, Wells Fargo or something. And so I have to kind of adjust my rules and think a little bit about those. But that, for me, that comes because I've been doing this for a long time, and I've run thousands of DCFs and looked at thousands of companies to try to gain that experience. And am I perfect? Nope. Am I going to make mistakes? Absolutely. But for me, it's trying to be consistent and using the same system and method, and then figuring out what I can adjust from there. And that's kind of how I try to view it.
Let's talk about a company on your watch list. In addition to Visa, you also said there's another one you're learning more about. I'm not sure if you bought a position in this or not yet, but you said Novo Nordisk, insulin maker.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm a type 2 diabetic, and so that is something that is near and dear to my heart. And so I came across the company about a year ago or so, and the pharmaceutical industry is not something that's ever been on my radar. And I've frankly had stayed away from it because I felt like it was in the too hard pile. And once I started kind of diving into the company and learning more about it, reading through their financials, reading other blog posts by other smart people, and trying to learn as much about the company as I could, I really, really fell in love with the business. And they have two particular products that are really hot on the market right now, which is Ozempic and Wegovy. And they are both originally designed as diabetic medications, but they've really been embraced as part of the weight loss movement that is really, it really started in Hollywood and has kind of spread outward from there. And
as most things do in life, actually.
Yeah, of course. Right. Exactly. Yeah, of course. But I think for me, I haven't bought the company. And when I first started investigating it, it was trading around $100 a share. Now it's in the $150, $160. So I'm certainly kicking myself for not taking the plunge then. But my holdup with the company, I think it's a fantastic business. I really like management. I love their theory, their methods, what they're trying to do. I love management's compensation structure, and they're really aligned with shareholders. Their financials are fantastic. They generate tons and tons of free cash flow, great margins, and they have they've had great revenue growth recently. My biggest holdup with not pulling the trigger is I haven't been able to determine whether this is these historical growth rates that they're seeing right now, is that a phenomenon because of the popularity of something like Ozempic, or is this more structurally what's really I can expect going forward? And so I really struggle with that, and I haven't been able to assign a base rate, like what do I think this pharmaceutical industry can grow at? And that's, I guess, really my holdup at this point. I think it's a great company. Eli Lilly, too. It's a fantastic business as well. But I just haven't pulled the trigger on Novo Nordisk because of that growth rate. I just can't wrap my head around it yet.
Those are great points. So Novo Nordisk and Visa, the two companies we talked about. Maybe one final question as we're talking about stocks here, especially from an investing for beginners context, is perhaps myself is the example on this. When investors get new into investing in the stock market, they get real excited, enthusiastic, and put a ton of money back the truck in whatever company they're excited about. But maybe a lot of times it's a better long-term process to just kind of tiptoe in and add over time. I wanted to ask how you feel about allocation. Do you have any rules of thumb of how large a position can be in your overall portfolio when you think about risk management versus returns?
Yeah.
How do you think about allocation?
That's a fantastic question. I think the way that I have evolved, I guess, my thinking on this, right or wrong, is I have started to I guess, initiate smaller positions and kind of build into them. I've heard the term starter position referred, so less than 1%, and start a small position. Perfect example is Mercado Libre. It's a company that I'm really interested in as well. And I started a very small position in them. And as I, now that I have skin in the game, I will start to do a lot more research on the company as I try to get more comfortable with that investment. Generally, I try to hold everything in the 5% range and whatnot. And my friend Brian Feraldi mentioned something to me. He said, I start out at 5% and then I let them grow into higher portions of my portfolio. And so I've done that with Visa. I did that with Berkshire Hathaway. I did that with Adyen. And now those companies are roughly in the 10 to 15% range of my portfolio. So those three companies occupy almost 45% of my portfolio. But generally, I like to hold things in the 5% range and then kind of build into it. And I think backing up your truck and putting 50% into Apple like Buffett has done, or like it's grown into, I can't do that. I can't sleep at night with that kind of thing. And I think beginning investors, it's awesome to be enthusiastic about that. And like you said, backing up the truck and throwing all their money into, you know, pick company B. And I think that the enthusiasm is great, but I think it's probably better to learn your mistakes smaller and learn from those and try to build into those positions. And I think that will keep people investing for longer, because the biggest tragedy is when people invest and let's say, for example, they invested in Zoom in the pandemic, and they were super excited about it, and they wrote it all the way up, and then they wrote it all the way down. And that can discourage a lot of people, and they get out of the market. And I think that's the biggest tragedy is once they take the step in, that they don't stay.
And what do you tell an investor like that, that's into Zoom or that's gotten into GameStop or, you know, has gotten into, you know, whatever company, cannabis, whatever it is, you know, got out there, the hype is out there, gets people enthusiastic about that. A lot of times there's lurking landmines and those companies that ride it all the way up and then all the way down. How do you reinforce to a newer investor that's gotten burned perhaps by something like that, that, hey, there's a longer term path. There's a light at the end of the tunnel here.
Right. I think it goes back to understanding the fundamentals and understanding what it is that you own and really trying to wrap your head around, why am I buying this? What is this company? And there's nothing wrong with throwing, you know, some fun money, air quote fun money, at something like GameStop or Zoom or crypto or any of those kinds of things. But I think if you want to sleep well at night, you have to understand that investing in the stock market is a long game. It's not a short game. And the way that these vastly wealthy people have acquired all that wealth is through a long period of time. Elon Musk, one of the richest men in the world, he didn't acquire that overnight. And, you know, most people don't understand that Tesla's been around for, what, 10, 12 years? And, you know, he went through some very hard times to get to where he is now. And it's not a quick game. Warren Buffett, you know, he generated the vast majority of his wealth after he was 50. And I'm not saying that to discourage people, but they need to understand that compounding takes time to impact your returns. And if you want to play in the sandbox and buy those, you know, more, I guess, risky investments like cannabis or crypto or those kinds of things, by all means, you know, scratch that itch. But then on the other side, if you, you know, buy, you know, I guess, longer term investments like the S&P 500, for example, put the vast majority of your money in that and then play in the other sandbox with those things, because that gets you excited. And then as you learn more, you can branch out into different things. But I think that's probably a good way for people to start.
Any final thoughts as we close out here, Dave? Any final things you'd like to say to investors in our audience?
I think the biggest takeaway is listen to what Simon's preaching. His podcast is awesome, and he's got a lot of smart stuff, and he and all the contributors do a great job, and they do a great job of explaining things, and that could be very helpful. I think the biggest takeaway that I try to help people understand is know what you're buying, understand the price that you're paying for it, and be patient. You don't have to have activity for activity's sake. It's okay to buy a company once a month or invest two or three times a year. That's okay. You don't have to go out and buy and trade and have lots of activity. Over time, if you buy the right companies, you will do well over a very long period of time.
And Dave, I believe if anyone wants to follow your podcast, can follow it at einvestingforbeginners.com. Is that the right web address?
That's exactly the right address.
Perfect. Well, Dave Ahern, again, the co-host of Investing for Beginners, the podcast that he hosts with Andrew Saher, his partner. Dave, it's been a real pleasure having you on the podcast of our own show here today. Thanks for being with 7 Investing.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure. I really enjoyed it as well. Thank you, Simon.
And thanks everybody for tuning into this edition of our 7 Investing podcast, where it's our mission to empower you to invest in your future. We hope you have a great week. We'll see you next time.